Good morning, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Outdoor Connection. My guest this morning is Bruce White, and we'll be talking about the Tout Bird Club, and this time of year is a good time to talk about birding because of all the migrations. Good morning, sir. How you doing?
Good morning to everyone. Good morning.
I just really became aware of the Tout Bird Club a few years ago, and some of the people I know that are in it, they were bringing it back to life, so to speak. Can you give us a little history of the club, when it started?
It started in 1934, roughly, when Wilson and Nell Tout, two locals who were big bird enthusiasts.
They were also teachers, weren't they?
Yes. In fact, I was going to mention that Wilson was a teacher here at North Platte. Then he turned in, he was the principal at the high school, and then eventually the superintendent.
Yeah.
So, yeah, local educators, big into birding. And the two of them decided to share their knowledge and reach out to people and just gather and talk about birds, and mostly for wildlife and conservation purposes. But they kept copious notes, and there are several books that that had come from their research.
When I did my initial research about the club and wrote about it a few years ago, I remember some of that, being teachers. And didn't he also end up going east and talking to different ornithology groups and stuff like that?
Yes, and he was also one of the founding members of the Nebraska Ornithologists Union.
That's the one I remember.
That was in 1899. He and his wife were both founding members of that. And it's going today. Last fall, I was at a meeting in McCook for the NAU. So, excuse me, N-O-U.
N-O-U.
So, yeah, his impact on birding in Nebraska and the country and the world is pretty outstanding for a guy that grew up in York but yep. moved to North Platte.
I always find it interesting and intriguing when people think there's nothing out here in Nebraska, yet we produce people that can do things like this.
That's right.
And who knows where it may go from there. Somebody today may take off and become another specialist in the field.
Precisely.
One of my personal heroes is Dr. Harold Edgerton, who was from Aurora.
Mm-hmm.
And everything that he invented, it just, you know, the flash bulb, the mechanical shutter, the electronic shutter. If you watch any of the Discovery shows and National Geographics where they're doing side scan sonar in the water and they show it, it's got the initials E, G, and G on the side. The E is Edgerton.
IB.
So he was an amazing guy. Strobe light, he invented strobe light.
Interesting.
And he just says he was just an old farm boy that wanted to figure out how things worked.
Mm-hmm.
So he did it. When did your current club, the Tout Bird Club, when did it reorganize and come back into play?
I want to say between 3 and 4 years ago. Bonnie Edwards, Julie Geiser.
Right. Both of whom are great birders in their own right.
Yes, and I if I neglect to mention someone else who was involved in the bringing it back to life, forgive me, but decided that we needed to get people back together, talk about birds, go on field trips, share our knowledge, bring in new people. Especially when I say share our knowledge, especially with the youngsters,
right.
Get them into birding and understanding what it's all about. And it's a huge hobby. Many, many people are bird watchers.
Oh, yes.
And it's not like we're begging for new blood, but it's always wonderful to see young person's eyes light up when they understand that they just saw a new bird that they'd never seen before.
That's right.
I still have that wide-eyed expression when I get to see a new bird I've never seen before.
Your current club, when are their meetings?
Typically, they're either the first or second Monday of each month. Currently, right now, we're on a second Monday kind of schedule.
Okay.
And the next one is going to be March 10th at 6 o'clock at the College on Halligan.
Well, this is timely then, because we got it in ahead of the meeting.
Yes, so perfect.
I've had a chance to attend a couple of meetings. I got invited to do a presentation, and I did it on crows and ravens, mm-hmm. which tremendously intelligent birds.
Some of my favorite birds are in that family.
Yes. The New Caledonian crow is at the top of my list mm-hmm. there because it makes its own tools, and that's a pretty
That's rare in the thing. Animal world.
Yeah.
Yep.
Is there any cost to join the club?
Absolutely no cost. In fact, a better question is, what does it pay? Mm. And I look at it like it pays you back in the fellowship and the conversations and the knowledge sharing that you get when we sit down at a meeting and people talk about birds that they've seen or birds they're looking for or people who are just asking questions about birds. What bird is that? And they'll show a picture on their phone. And we bird watchers are very sharing people. I've bird watched all across the country. And I've been in all 50 states. And I'll be on a trail or something, and you see someone with binoculars or a camera. And you can
you got to figure out what they're looking at.
You just stop and you say, what have you seen today? And it's they're so willing to share about what's out in this part of the world, especially if you're not from that part of the world.
Right.
Bird watchers are great sharing people like that. They want to let other people know what they're seeing.
We have to be in just a pretty good spot to be a birder with all the migrations that come through here. I mean, we're right dead center of the Central Flyway.
Yep.
So we get not only all the waterfowl and eagles and sandhill cranes and all that, but huge amounts of, quote, non-game species that fly the same path.
Yeah, exactly. Nebraska sits right in the middle, and so we're on what's considered the juncture of the eastern birds and the western birds.
Yes.
So we get a huge variety that many other states don't. Because if you go...
A little bit of an overlap.
It's an overlap, exactly. Yeah. The eastern part of the country has their eastern birds. The western part has their western birds. But we're right in that sweet spot.
I noticed that when the first Peterson bird guide I ever bought, and it went into quite detail on that overlap zone and how unique that was. And I thought, well, darn, I'm right in the middle of it.
Yeah, so you had to buy both books.
Oh, yeah.
So. Yeah. I think it was a marketing thing.
It probably was. And I'm a book guy. I love to have that reference book that I can grab and look at any time. What got you interested in birding initially and why?
54 years ago in third grade.
Got this nailed down to the hour.
That's right, just about. Mrs. Larson, my third grade teacher in Westminster, Colorado, the unit, the theme of the year was birds, and we would write about birds. We would do spelling tests about birds. We would research, and we would draw birds.
Nice.
I'm pretty sure we even did math problems that had to do with bird eggs and things like that.
That's a good teacher.
If
she could draw all that back in and then reinforce it with those different activities, excellent teacher.
If you ask me who my other elementary teachers are, I can't tell you their names. But I can tell you Mrs. Larson, because she meant the most to me.
That's very good.
And we would go on afternoon walks looking for birds. I'll just never forget that bright sunshine and walking around and her talking about birds. And I was hooked. And I've been doing it ever since.
Very good. Now, I got a question. I'll jump ahead a little bit. I was mm-hmm. going to ask you, but with that passion, I know birders are very inclined to travel to see specific species and stuff. Have you done that, and what have you seen?
Yeah, absolutely. Last year, I took a long trip to go see the eclipse in New York, where my daughter lives in Buffalo. And I traveled, drove from here to Buffalo and stopped, I don't know, 70 times, I think, looking for birds along the way. And most of the time, it's just, what am I going to see? I'm not looking for anything in particular. I'll just take whatever happens to fly by. I've gone on specific trips in southern Arizona to look for particular birds because southern Arizona is pretty much an extension out of Mexico. There's a pocket that the Mexican birds come up and visit southern Arizona. And so you can go look for particular birds there. I've taken a trip down to Cozumel to look for birds as well. So it's for me, if I'm planning a vacation, the first thing I'm doing is, where am I going to go bird watching when I'm there?
Fair enough, and that's good. As we were talking off air before we started, my interest in the non-game birds that you primarily are looking for grew out of my hunting, wanting to know more about that, and being a biologist at heart, wanting to know more about it. And the bird, like I said, we're in an epicenter kind of for birds here. It's just amazing what you can see. We're right in the beginning of the spring migrations, and most people normally think of, you know, waterfowl and the sandhill cranes. Which, have you seen a crane yet?
I've not seen one, but on February 10th, I went out, took the dog outside before I came to work, and I heard them flying over.
Really?
So as early as February 10th, I heard them. Now, those would have truly been early birds.
Those were the real advance guard scouts going out.
Yes, and I'm pretty sure they got shocked by that cold weather we had last week.
It probably pushed them back to Corpus Christi.
Yes.
But I have not seen one yet, but, I mean, it can be any day. And
yes,
with the weather we're having now, definitely.
Yeah, in fact, driving to work today, I'm looking at birds flying over and thinking, are those geese or could those be some cranes coming in too?
I got to look to see if they're trailing their legs.
Yeah, that's right. Haven't seen any cranes yet. But
so, looks like Tanner says we're about ready for a commercial, so we want to break right now? All right, we'll do that, and hang with us, folks. We'll be right back after these messages. Welcome back, everybody. We're talking with Bruce White this morning, and we're talking about the Tout Bird Club and about some of the miracles of nature we get to see this time of year. Aside from the waterfowl and the cranes that'll be back here soon, what other birds can you typically see coming back this time of year?
In March, you'll start seeing some waterfowl, more variety in the waterfowl. Some of the teals will be coming back in. Widgeons stay here year-round, and mallards are here year-round. But more canvasbacks, more redheads, things like that will be coming in. We're going to get a greater variety of raptors as well. We have the bald eagles and the red-tailed hawks that are here year-round.
Right.
But we'll get a much greater variety of raptors.
Ospreys are my favorite.
Osprey will be coming back, yep. Then you'll start looking for more shorebirds, avocents and yellow legs. We'll have some snipe showing up and phalaropes, and that familiar call of the killdeer will start up again here in March.
I'm amazed at how many people are surprised that there really is such a thing as snipes.
Yes, yeah, the old joke about going on a snipe
hunt, right.
But no, we've got them, and come out to the Tout Bird Club, and we'll show you where you can go see snipe.
Very good. What do you need in the way of equipment?
Your eyes to start, right, and your ears. And then you can start with just your simple binoculars. And even a cell phone camera will take some pretty good pictures.
Today's cell phones can do very good.
Yeah.
And if you have your cell phone, and then if you've got Cornell's bird identification app,
that's eBird.
Yes, you just pull it in, and if it's a bird you've never seen before, you take a picture, click a couple buttons, it'll tell you exactly what it is and the life history.
Yes, forgive me, that's the Merlin app that does that, yeah. And the eBird is where you can keep track of the birds you've seen.
That's a huge thing. The backyard bird counts and everything, I'm fascinated with it. And I love the fact that they've tied it in and they've given it a name, the Citizen Scientist. And how much data is actually collected and logged that way?
The Cornell Labs have been doing this for years and years, and you're allowed to go back, and if you've got a legitimate sighting from 1972, you can enter that, and it'll go into their database. And from that, you can go to the eBird site and look at the scatter history of where birds have been over the years.
Now, when you say that's a new term for me, scatter history, is that like where incidentals are showing up?
Yes, you can go back and isolate it to a particular month of a year to see where a particular bird was seen. And if you wanted to, you could watch the migration or the progression of blue jays moving from the East Coast toward the West Coast.
Oh, yeah.
When I was in school, we didn't have blue jays in Wyoming. Now we have them because they're constantly moving more westward. So if you're that into it, if you want to really become a bird geek, you can go to that eBird site and dig into this data, and it's absolutely fascinating.
Now, geek being the trigger word there, and a biologist, mm-hmm. you know, my thought is, why are they continuing to move west? And my first thought is, well, it's got to be as we people move in and plant certain things or ag habits or whatever. They're just following their food source for the most part, probably.
And there must be someone who's doing research on that.
Oh, I'm sure.
Because when I was in college 30 years ago, it was talked about in my ornithology class that the blue jays are moving west. And it's now more and more obvious. People are talking about seeing a blue jay for the first time in western Wyoming.
I grew up in South Texas, so we had blue jays all the time. And then we had mockingbirds, which mm-hmm. you don't see up here. And I have a very rare, that's the state bird of Texas, but I have a very weird story about a mockingbird. And I was a kicker in football for my high school team. And unfortunately, I was kicking a field goal and intersected the path of a mockingbird.
Oh, my.
Mockingbird did not survive.
Oh, that would be a tough collision.
Oh. Yep. We talked a little bit about, you know, traveling to see birds, and you mentioned you went to Arizona mm-hmm. to see some. Any other places that you have on your bucket list that you want to go?
I want to go back to Hawaii and do some more bird watching. We were there for just a short time, and I couldn't get out on enough excursions to see some of the native Hawaiian birds because there are so many there that are only found in Hawaii.
Right.
But I will go anywhere to see birds.
just ask and you'll go.
Yes. A bucket list of mine would be to get on a round of the world cruise and, you know, all the countries that they stop in and just go see as many birds as I can in each of those countries.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Currently I'm sitting on my life list. I'm currently at 444 birds, different species. And for bird watchers, and that's kind of you earn badges, personal badges, by when you get to each, you know, like 450, that's really exciting. That's a milestone. You get to 500, that's a real big milestone. And there are people out there with a few thousand who travel the world.
Two species that I would like to go see in the wild are puffins and emperor penguins.
Absolutely. I want to get out to Maine, go up and see the puffins, yeah. And I would just love to be able to get down to Antarctica and see different penguins, too.
Yep. Penguins are a very unique species. So, what is the most fun about this as a hobby or a... almost a semi-profession.
I stare at a computer screen most of the day doing IT work. And when I get to go bird watching, it takes that rectangular glowing object out of my vision. And now I'm seeing actual nature out there. I have to have headphones on for meetings and things like that. And I listen to music. You get out and you're bird watching, and suddenly your ears are hearing something completely different. So for me, it is like a vacation from the everyday.
There you go.
I can take a walk on a trail, listen to the birds, look for birds, and it's completely different than anything else I do during the day.
Very good. Are we out of time? Unfortunately, we'll have to talk some more. That's it for this week, folks. We'll see you next time on another edition of the Outdoor Connection.